If you find yourself laughing at some of the things Ron says on this show or some of the comedy that you hear, here's a little reminder from Ron himself.
This isn't actually funny. It's actually pathetic.
Don't mind him. He gets in this mood sometimes. He just needs a big hug. Come here, big fella. Bring it in. I got plenty for you. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, sure, whatever.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, it is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am. Pleasure to be with you. I'll be passing hors d'oeuvres out to the audience today. You'll find under your chair something a little crusty. Don't touch it. It's not for you. Just realized, if you play the lottery or you get those scratch tickets in those convenience stores, you must sit down and reevaluate your life. You really should look at your goals and your needs and your wants and start analyzing. Stop buying those tickets. I had a friend who was very excited, won $2,000 on one of those lottery scratch ticket things, you know, those lottery scratch ticket things, won $2,000, and I said, well, congratulations, have you ever won a scratch ticket before? And he said, no, I haven't. I've been scratching these things for like 10 years, and finally I've won $2,000. I said, great, how much money do you think you spent on scratch tickets over the past 10 years? And all of a sudden, he got very quiet, and he said, oh my God, I'm an idiot. He didn't say I was an idiot. He said to himself he was an idiot. I'll clarify that. I mean, if you want to go buy and scratch tickets, fine, but they should have a separate store for scratch tickets, because every time I go to a store and there's someone in front of me, that person for some reason does a scratch ticket thing, and I'm just standing there, you know, all I want to do is just, you know, pay for my bologna sandwich, but the guy in front of me is like, yeah, give me 10 of those scratch for life and another pickles for death, and give me one of those things there, bowling for Columbine, and give me that thing there, that scratch number 12. Give me that $2 one, the fish my pond scratch tickets, and give me the scratch, you know, touch my scratchers and holidays for life and winners of the century scratch ticket, and give me the Pavlos 8 and the polar ice cap scratch ticket, and give me the oozing pus sore scratch ticket, and give me the $55 for life, the six thousand one dozen half of another scratch ticket, and the scratch ticket of that. Oh my God, 20 minutes later, and give me the and cash these in, please. Here's like 2 million of these scratch tickets. Did I win any of them? Can you check them, put them through the machine? Or God, stop it. You're holding up the lives of others while you ruin yours. But I'm not here to complain about people who hold up lines at convenience stores buying scratch tickets. That's not my purpose on the planet. I don't know what it is, but it's not that. How are you? How you doing today? What day of the week is this? Quick, No, it's not Saturday. It's Friday. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Whatever. Those of you that have jobs, I guess you're tired from working all week. Now you're going to sit on your ass and drink beer and watch television and sporting events. What a life, huh? What a life you have that you thought you had and you really don't. Get a hobby. Get a hobby. Do some quilting. Make a comforter. Do something. Ugh. Remember in the old days, remember that? Remember this, millennials, in the old days, if you knew somebody was going to have a baby, you got excited and you would buy some yarn and knit socks, baby socks. Do you remember those innocent times? They were so stupid, weren't they? They sell socks in stores. What the hell are you doing? Why are you making socks? Is that how you want to spend your time? Making socks? Yeah, but she's going to have a baby. I have to make socks for the baby. They sell that in the store. I think it's like 50 cents. Anyway, hi. I know. I know exactly what you're thinking, and I agree with you. Oh, man. You know, I was watching one of those television shows where they have the little children dancing. This is a time of year of the dance recitals for the little children. Don't you love those things? I'm not talking about the little children. I'm talking about the dance recitals. Don't you love those things? No, I don't. Nobody loves a dance recital. Even if you're in it, who cares about the other people in the dance recital? We just care about our kid. I have to sit through all that crap just to see my kid get on the stage for like 90 seconds. And I have to sit there out of courtesy to the other children and the other parents. You don't want to leave when your kid's act is over. Out of courtesy, you have to watch the whole damn six-hour dance recital. Dance recitals are incredibly interesting from the standpoint of human acceptance of things that make no sense. It's the only time we sit in an auditorium in a theater and the entertainment is awful. I mean, it's awful. It's excruciatingly horrible. There is no level of expertise in this dance recital. Except for when the seniors, the high school students get up and they dance, which is not even somewhat acceptable. It's just more tolerable. And it's adorable. I mean, if you're a parent and you have a little child in a dance recital, it's a moment in time for you. For other people, it's a moment lost that they'll never get back. Dance recitals are basically saying they should hand out programs. And the title of the dance recital should be, watch these other people's children and get as bored as you possibly can. I'm serious, man. I mean, it's just, it's horrific. It's horrific. But it's for the kids, so, oh, okay. And everybody looks so happy at a dance recital, and I know inside they're just fuming. I think I'm the only one that looks at a dance recital and says, what the hell am I doing here? Why can't I leave after my kid is up on the stage and does their little number? And the dance recital number of the little kid is, let's face it, all the little kid is doing is like kicking their feet like every 10 seconds and turning to the left and turning to the right, and then they get off the stage in some type of a lineup. I mean, the problem is you have to hang around for the finale. Damn those finales. If it wasn't for that damn finale, I could have been out of there 2 hours ago. No, it's the freaking finale where all the dancers in the dance recital get on the stage and then they sing like the last half of a song and then it's over. That's what you sat there for? And you have to pay money to go to these things. You have to pay money. You spend thousands of dollars on going to the dancing school, which teaches them nothing. Obviously, by the way of what you're seeing on the stage, they've obviously learned nothing but to walk on stage in a straight line and to walk off in a straight line. And there's always one kid that walks in the wrong direction or isn't in tune with the other kids, and everybody laughs at the child, and because it's cute and adorable. It's not cute and it's not adorable. Spent thousands of dollars on the dancing school, and then when they have the dance recital, you have to pay for a ticket. Excuse me? You want to see your child on the stage? Well, sure. $20. No! Who would spend $20 for that show? Are you kidding me? Anyway, I spent a lot of years of my life videotaping dance recitals. I had a video production company for quite a period of time, very successful when videotaping things was popular. This is before you could videotape things or video things in your cell phone. It's before that. If you wanted memories of your child standing on stage making a fool out of themselves, you had to hire me to videotape your child. But I'd have to sit there during the entire dance recital and videotape the whole damn thing. Had I not done that, I would probably be about 5 years younger right now. But I did that for a living. It was very lucrative. There's a lot of money in that business, baby. There's a lot of money in that dance recital business, that dancing school business. I don't know if it's legal. It should be illegal to have a dancing school and a dance recital. It should be illegal, but it's not. So I made a lot of money off of that thing, but what a freaking waste of time. So I know there whence thou I speak. I speaketh from experience. But it's just a part of life. It's just a part of life. It's just a part of life. It's part of the routine. You have a child, you have to go to a dance recital. That's part of the deal. When you're conceiving a child and having sex in the bed with rose petals all over it, you don't say to yourself, you know, if I go through with this sexual act, I might have to go to a dance recital eventually. Ugh, maybe I'll pass on this.
Why, you don't want to have sex with me?
No, because I think I'm going to end up someday at a dance recital. Sorry. The ramifications are not worth the pleasure.
Wow, you're strange.
No, I'm just thinking ahead. When I was older, I believe I was about 13 years old. I don't know exactly how old any point in my childhood I actually was. My childhood is an entire blur of just not being able to do things that I wanted. That was just a blur. I think I was 13, and my parents, in order to socialize me, and they thought that was their life's ambition, was to socialize me, like I was some kind of orangutan imported from another country and I had to be socialized. Otherwise, I'd sit in a cage all day and eat my own feces, which is what happened. They sent me to dancing school. There was a Knights of Columbus. I don't know what the hell that means, by the way. There are clubs all over the place, and it's called Knights of Columbus. What does that mean? What does that mean? I know there's a K in front of the Knights, so we're talking about people wearing armor and these shields and of Columbus. What Columbus was around like way after there were knights in medieval castles. I don't understand this club. We are the Knights of Columbus. I don't know what that means. I don't, it makes no sense. Anyway, it was in a Knights of Columbus hall. My parents sent me to dancing school. And it's not the kind of dancing school where they have dance recitals. It was where they teach you how to ballroom dance. Yes, I grew up during an era where young kids were taught how to do the waltz and the cha-cha. Millennials don't know what I'm talking about. They think I'm speaking another language, like I'm from Romania or something. This is how bad it was. I went every Tuesday late afternoon for about a year until I just refused to go anymore. I had to wear a dark suit, 13 years old kids. I had to wear a dark suit, tie, whole bit. A little pocket handkerchief had to be white. I'm serious. This really happened. I had to wear white gloves. What? White gloves? What am I, training to be a maitre d' at a restaurant? White gloves? And there were girls that went, and there were boys that went. And for an hour, we were forced to dance with each other, and we were taught, I guess, what you would call ballroom dancing. I didn't know what ballroom was. I thought that was like just wearing undergarments that gave your testicles enough room to move around. But apparently, that's not what ballroom dancing is. It was, however, my first introduction at that age to holding a girl close to me. We weren't allowed to hug or anything like that. We were allowed to hold hands, but we had to be at a distance, and we were taught the cha-cha and the waltz and things like that. I think there were other dances. I just can't remember what they were. It doesn't really matter at this point. And I hated dancing school. And I believe every single kid at the Knights of Columbus also hated dancing school, yet our parents thrusted us there for a reason. And to this day, I don't know what the reason is. Remember when I was older and my parents were elderly, I thought in the back of my mind of saying to them, you know, I remember when I was 13 years old, you sent me to dancing school. What the hell were you thinking? But I never said that to them. I just kept quiet. I guess it's not the kind of thing that you quiz your parents about. Oh, I hated dancing school. Oh, no. Then I got older, went into the video production business. At first, I was just videotaping dance recitals. It was like, okay, Ron, this is, I don't know what the meaning of this is. I don't know if it's karma. I don't know what it is, but here we are. When I woke up this morning, I did not know that I would be spending an entire show talking about dancing schools and dance recitals. And that's what makes life exciting for me. How about you? Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. I have a very interesting author with us today. But before we do that, there's this.
Hello, this is Father Mike Slannery from the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church here in town. And I'm excited to tell you about a thrilling new addition to our monthly Friday night bingo game lineup. In addition to classic favourites like Coverall and Four Corners, we'll now be adding Full Contact Bingo. That's right, Full Contact. That's where the friendly community game you love meets the hard-hitting action of football and hockey that you crave. Is Mrs. Smith about to call bingo before you? Hit her with a cross-check or crash her into the boards. I should mention that all full contact games will take place in the street hockey rink behind the parish function hall where the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Fighting Sons of Leviticus hold their matches. Protective gear is recommended and weapons are not allowed. And if you feel bad about taking out a friend or neighbour so you can win a few bucks at the bingo, I will be on hand to take your confession. That all starts next Friday night at the parish hall at the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church, 27 Eucharist Way, right downtown. We'll see you there.
Colin Kersey joins us now. His newest work is Swimming with the Angels. He is a, well, it's a suspense thriller, which we all love. It's been a while since you're, well, first of all, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's been a while since your first novel.
Yes. Well, everybody thought that first novel, Soul Catcher, would become a movie.
Yeah.
When it didn't, I had to go back to work. So I've been in marketing for the last 25 years.
Well,
but this book, Swimming, never left the back of my mind. It was haunting me. So I went back to school. Actually, even while I was still working, I went to Stanford University, which has an online program. And that really helped me get this second work done. So thank goodness I got it published.
Yeah. How long did it take you to get through the second work?
Oh, it took a few years, actually. It wasn't easy. What was working full-time and all the other stuff you go through, got diagnosed with cancer, lost my parents, you know, all the stuff we go through in life.
Yeah, I was going to say the usual, because we all go through those similar things, obviously. You've worked with some big celebrities in your time as well, I understand.
I have. Actually, in my marketing career, I worked on some big accounts, and I had the pleasure of working with the Academy Award-winning actor John Voight and producing a homeless shelter video. And also, as a writer, I hooked up with Elizabeth George years ago, and she mentored me in getting Soul Catcher written, and that was a really cool thing to have her helping me out.
Wow. How did writing become your thing, Colin?
I was always, you know, you can tell from my voice, I'm not the best speaker in the world. In fact, I've been losing my voice for the last 20 years.
Really?
So anyway, I loved reading and writing. I always wanted to be a writer, but as you know, it's not easy to have a creative career. It takes fortitude and really sticking to it. It's just, you never know if you're going to get published and all that work is going to be for nil. So I just, you know, kept at it and fortunately was able to make a career out of it in marketing.
Yeah.
And that is really, you know, helped keep me in the game, kept my mind working. And my first book, I said I wrote it in 15 minutes. It was 15 minutes in this client's office, 15 minutes in that client's office.
Okay. So it was a cumulative thing. Okay.
Exactly.
You know, when one sits down and writes a book, whether it's fiction or a memoir or whatever the case may be, it's very interesting because you're pouring your brains onto paper. Do you get that sensation?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'm a real student of people, so it takes studying people, and I've been fortunate again in my career to get to travel not only around the U.S., but the world, and to observe people in other countries and so forth, and it was fun listening to your show yesterday about tagging crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of craziness out there. And as I became more and more aware of people in pain, especially, I mean, by the time I was 30, I knew 24 people that had committed suicide. Mm. Part of that was growing up in the state of Washington. So it made me very wary about people and what's going on beneath the surface. And that really helps you become a good writer if you're thinking about what's really going on here.
Yeah, I mean, there's two kinds of people on the earth. There's writers and performers and entertainers and people who pour their soul and use their minds. And then there's the people that just read them. it's definitely a different life on both ends. Okay, let's talk about the book itself, Swimming with Angels. This is about a man on the run for his life. How does it turn into a thriller?
So it began reading about hundreds of millions of dollars being hacked from a large financial institution, mm-hmm. and also living in Southern California and reading about the savagery of the Mexican drug cartels.
Yep.
So I put those things together with the experience from one of my marriages where, you know, really, how well do you know the person sleeping beside you?
Mm-hmm.
So I put all that together and came up with the idea of this young man who marries a woman who is a wire transfer expert at a large hedge fund. Mm-hmm. And she's watching millions and billions of dollars go by on her monitor every day and gets a little greedy. And when she gets the chance, she tries to steal $100 million. And the next thing my character knows, he's wounded and his wife is dead. And she tells him she's tried to steal this money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hidden somewhere in a bank in the Cayman Islands. And meanwhile, he's now told by an FBI agent he's got to leave town, leave his identity behind because the cartel wants its money back.
Ooh.
It turns out they were laundering their money through this hedge fund. And so she made a mistake and grabbed the wrong $100 million.
Ooh.
So he's on the run for his life, and he thinks he's found the perfect refuge in a little trout farm in Washington State. They're paying him under the table. They don't know his real name, and it looks ideal, but he doesn't realize that there's a real mess going on beneath the surface of the water there at the trout farm. People are, you know, suffering their own issues and so forth, and it's going to erupt into a whole war with he ends up bringing down, you know, the whole place, and the cartel, of course, is hot on his trail.
Wow, kind of cool. It's interesting. It seems like what you've done is you've taken a situation that can snowball into something amazing, but you've used places that are familiar to you to set them up in.
That's right. In fact, I grew up in the state of Washington, and so I love writing about it. I think it has some great things going for it. Mm-hmm. In addition to the beauty, there's the rain and the weather and all of that. It just makes for a neat counterpoint to the emotions of the people that I'm writing about.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Now I guess you're encompassed in releasing the book and getting it out there.
That's right. It's a tough thing today in publishing because there's so many books. My first book, I think there were maybe 50,000 books published that year. This time, there's probably 500,000 books being published. So yeah, it's a tough thing. But you know, you do your best. You write a good book, and you hope people will discover it. Fortunately, I've gotten some really good reviews, so that helps.
It is captivating. I'm familiar with it, and it draws you in, and that's what a good book does. It takes you out of your life situation and puts you somewhere else, and now you're living in two different worlds when you're reading this book, and that's what it does. I must give you kudos for that.
Thank you very much, Ron. I love hearing that. In fact, the best thing is always to hear that I couldn't put it down. And fortunately, that's been a lot of the reaction to Swimming.
Yeah, fantastic. It's called Swimming with the Angels. It's available everywhere at this point, on Amazon as well, I would assume.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's where the millennials get their reading material from, you know.
That's right.
I don't know if there are any bookstores left, but they're actually the ones that are left are doing quite well, oddly enough. So there you go. I wish the best for you, and I hope that this particular book develops into other mediums as well, because it definitely has the legs to do that. So it's always a pleasure speaking to you. I hope we can do it again.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful. I'll be back again on Monday with a brand new program. I hope that you join me at that time. My hopes will be dashed, but nonetheless, that's what hope is about. Hope is where you look forward to the future and you hope for the best. You assume the best. It never really seems to come to fruition. So your hopes and dreams are dashed. Not only dashed, but snubbed out in a violent manner. However, I do hope that you join me on Monday with when we do a brand new show. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.